CC?
Yeah,
You
sorry. Do you have a question?
always cut me off as I'm in mid-flow singing along to Flawless, and then you answer.
Hello?
Yep, can you hear me?
Yes.
I was saying you always cut off my Flawless as I'm in mid, like, sing along. You answer the phone. I love
I'm sorry.
that. All right. Well, I think that we are ready to get started. Are we already recording? Oh, okay. I didn't even realize that we were recording. All right. Well, greetings. My name is Aisha Moody Mills, and I am a senior fellow here at the Center for American Progress and director of the FIRE Initiative, which explores the impact of public policy on LGBT people of color. I'm currently co-authoring a report with five other colleagues from the Center for HIV Law and Policy, Columbia Law School's Center for Gender and Sexuality Law, Siena University's School of Law, Streetwise and Safe, and UC Berkeley Law School, which will be the first of its kind to address the overcriminalization of LGBT people and people living with HIV and AIDS and their experiences in the criminal justice system. We know that LGBT people of color in particular are arrested and detained at disproportionately high rates. So today we are going to discuss why. And I am honored to have with me African American transgender activist CeCe McDonald, who was recently released from prison, to share her story with us and to talk to us about the bias and discrimination that she and so many other transgender women of color face when it comes to policing, the adjudication process, and the criminal justice system overall. So thank you very much for joining us, CeCe.
Thank you, Aisha, for having me.
We are so glad that you are now home. You were recently released from serving 19 months in prison for allegedly using deadly force in order to protect yourself from a group of people who attacked you on the streets of your hometown of Minneapolis. So could you just start off by telling us a little bit about what happened and sharing your story?
Well, what happened was me and a group of my friends, and a family member were walking to a local grocery store that was open for 24 hours. And we decided to walk there. And that we were stopped by the police prior to the incident. In my opinion, I felt like it was racial discrimination and just
So the police stopped
profiling.
You?
Yes, it stopped me and my friends. They said something about a noise complaint, but we were just walking down the street, and also there were like bars letting out around this time, so the noise complaint could have been from any, you know, bar site, but they chose to stop us.
And you said you think that it was racial discrimination, even in the first place, that you guys were stopped.
Yes, of course. It was definitely profiling to see a group of black, you know, youth walking down the street and say, to assume that they're up to no good or, you know, about to do something illegal or criminal. So I felt like I knew that instantly, especially with my history with law enforcement and knowing how it is when it comes to being African American and being trans and both of those things and also those things separately on different, you know, occasions. So, yeah, I definitely felt like it was racial profiling and discrimination. And then as we get closer to the bar, me and my ex at the time were talking. So my cousin and two of my friends kind of trailed ahead as we kind of like slow down to talk or whatever. And like, I can say a couple of moments later, probably 5 minutes, I see this exchange of words. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I see it happening between the people who I were with and the people who were outside of the bar. And so I kind of, you know, just took it as, you know, people coming out, you know, having, you know, just like conversation or whatever. But no, that was the complete opposite. As I got closer, you know, that's when I began to hear the epithets and, like, you know, the transphobic and racist language that was spewing from the person's mouth. Mm. It, you know, it kind of made me, you know that this definitely was not a light exchange of words and, you know, a cheerful hello and goodbye. It was, you know, something more ominous and, you know, bad. And that's kind of the feeling that I get as soon as I heard the words, you know, faggot and nigger. Mm. Niggers need to go back to Africa, you know, things like that. And it kind of just, you know, put me in a place where I know I had to, you know, get in the mode of being defensive, because I know that now where hate language comes, violence, and again, with the history of me being an African-American trans woman, I know, you know, what keywords are triggers to certain people, you know, like, for instance, if you're, you know, a white person called nigger, that's completely and absolutely a trigger word that, you know, most mm-hmm. African-American and black people don't, you know, associate with being good or polite.
It's a fighting word.
Exactly, as is, you know, faggot coming from a hetero mm-hmm. Person to, you know, someone who's LGBTQI. So it's kind of like, you know, knowing those words and all of those words were, like, directed at me at once, but they all had total different meanings. And, like, so you know that this person is now hating me for a numerous of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I see the exchange began to get a little more heated. And, you know, then at that time, my boyfriend, my ex, I'm sorry, got involved. And I kind of, you know, knew where this was going, and I wanted to avoid it at all costs, because, you know, again, like, certain trigger words put people in positions where they get defensive and feel disrespected, and, you know. But even in that, I still wanted to avoid this at all costs. I felt like looking at the crowd, looking at where these people were standing, knowing the history of this bar that they were at, knowing, you know, like, mm-hmm. it's just a group of black people, you know, compared to a bar of angry, white, narcissistic, racist, white folks, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, how do I navigate this and try to leave this area without, you know, anything happening to the people around me and myself. Of course, I'm always considering the people around me. And first, even the people, you know, who are, you know, kind of antagonizing the situation, because it's like, you know, I don't know what these people have on them. I don't know what, you know, like, you never know where a situation can, you know, lead to. So
what happened, you know, with these? What happened?
Well, the arguing continued, and it's everyone was kind of like face to face. I was standing in between my ex and a friend of mine, and I just remember hearing, "I'll take all of you bitches on." Now, see me. In this moment, in my brain was like, okay, this is really petty. Like, these people are really drunk and clearly, you know, intoxicated and inebriated. So I'm going to, you know, just be the bigger person. But it was like, soon as I had that thought to turn away, and those words, like, I can take you bitches on. So as I'm turning my head to walk away, you know, and tell them, like, come on, let's leave it alone. She threw her drink in my face and then proceeds to smash her glass into the side of my face. And instantly, I just, feel like this really, really just sharp pain in my face. And I see the blood, and then after that, she just grabbed my hair and kind of was like trying to drag me into the street.
So you're being attacked at this point.
Oh, yes, I'm definitely being attacked.
And you fight back?
I actually wasn't trying to fight back. I was telling them to get her off of me because I didn't know what type of damage was done to, you know, to me. And I didn't want to, like, worsen the cut or anything like that. I just wanted her to, because there was a lot of blood, like, literally, like, my whole shirt was ripped and covered in blood. My shorts were covered in blood. I was covered in blood. You know, my whole face was covered in blood. So I really was kind of disembodied. Like, I couldn't see because blood was in my eye. I couldn't really, you know, concentrate because now there's, like, this really sharp pain in my face. Also, with the fact that she's, like, yanking on my hair, trying to, like, pull me to the ground. With the fact that there's, like, a group of other people, like, trying to jump in and, like, attack. And other people, like, trying to, you know, combat them. So
how did the fight end up playing out? How did the whole brawl end up playing out?
Basically, people just broke us apart. Then after that, I remember walking away and like, or limping or whatever, but I was leaving the scene or whatever, going to go to the grocery store to actually like call the police, and because I didn't have my cell phone with me. Well, my cell phone didn't work. But I just remember, you know, walking to this parking lot, or at least trying to walk to this parking lot, and, like, people telling me to turn around, like, shouting, like, turn around, but, you know, my ears, like, was ringing, and, like, I'm trying to hear it, but it sounds so muffled, but I can tell that they're shouting. So I turn around, and, of course, there's being trotting behind me, like, for some reason, like...
So you're being followed, essentially, after you leave the scene.
Yeah, like, you know, and I'm telling him, like, you know, I don't want to fight. I'm, you know, I'm clearly walking away. You see I'm walking away, like, why even still pursuing? And, like, he didn't say anything. He didn't say any words. It was just, I can tell, like, he was really trying to hurt me. Especially knowing that, like, while me and his friend or girlfriend or whoever she was fighting, he was throwing, like, full beer glass bottles at my head, filled with beer, full beer bottles, and, like, literally trying to aim them at my head. I can see him, like, aiming at my head, but he missed twice because he had two beer bottles. And so I guess, you know, he felt like his vengeance went without, you know, satisfaction. So, you know, he was like...
Were you afraid for your life at that point?
I definitely was. I mean, at this point, it's like, you know, he just busted my face open. I just got jumped. And, like, I'm walking away, and, like, well, how are you still following me? Like, everything's over, you know. And he still had a beer bottle in his hand, so he could have did anything with that if he wanted to, but... You know, how am I supposed to know? When he was on the sensitive. I'm pretty sure he wasn't planning to pour me a drink. I know that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at this point, I'm like, I know where these situations lead to. I've heard stories. I've been there, you know. And so my first reaction was to try to scare him off. So I had some scissors in my purse. And, you know, I pulled them out. You know, so he can see them. I never said I was going to stab him. I never said that I was going to do anything to him. You know, I just wanted him to see that I had him in my hand. And that did not deter him. He clearly, for some reason, that made him angrier. And so now at this point, he's like sprinting towards me. And like I'm walking backwards. I'm discombobulated. I have blood in my face and my eyes. Everything's still going on. And he's like, lunges out and tries to, like, grab my hair and, like, yank me down. And, you know, my first reaction was to, you know, to strike, you know, whether I had something in my hand or not. But I was being attacked. So that was my
first
reaction.
So you were standing your ground and being attacked, and he ended up dead.
Yeah.
So
I actually didn't know that he passed away until I got into the interrogation room, because even after him being stabbed, and I didn't know he was stabbed, I seriously thought this man was, like, joking, because he, as he was walking backwards, he was like, "This bitch stabbed me," in those words. Like, like, I couldn't have stabbed you because you're still, like, going, like, you know, foul language, you know, just everything. And it's like, okay, so.
You know, what is really.
Even if I thought that I did, because I was just so focused on, like, getting away, that I couldn't even process, you know, what had happened to him. And I, you know, even to this day, it's hard for me to even, you know, acknowledge that, even though I have to accept that within myself to know that I was the person who took a person's life, for of how cruel and evil they are in this earth. Like, that's something I'm really against. But at the same time, I feel like every person deserves to protect themselves if they feel like they're in danger. And, you know, it's just that the system doesn't work equally for people when it comes to, you know, self-defense rights and minority groups and, you know.
And let's talk about that a bit. You know, your story really just resonated with America generally, but certainly with me, because it was not lost on us that at the same time, George Zimmerman walked away from killing poor Trayvon Martin because he was so-called standing his ground, even though he was under no threat. No one was chasing him with beer bottles. No one had gashed out his head. He wasn't bleeding tremendously that anyone could discern. And at the same time, it seemed that you were also standing your ground and being physically attacked, but had to pay a price for that. And so, I would love for you to tell us a little bit about, you know, that is really what we're going to get to the heart of in our report, where we talk about the criminal justice system and its biases. How did the police, how did the police treat you when, you know, that night? How did you feel like you were treated? You alluded to the fact that, you know, you've experienced issues with police before, too.
Exactly. Just alone, again, like, just profiling, not just as an African-American person, but as an African-American trans person. And because, you know, these stereotypes have been perpetuated throughout society about who we are as women, you know, that, you know, they assume that we all, you know, are sex workers, that we all, you know, do the same thing as whatever the case may be. So there were lots of times where I could have just been, you know, waiting at the bus stop for my bus to probably go to school or something and actually be pulled over by a cop because I looked like another trans person, you know, or, you know, just so many reasons that they would come up with to stop me. But it's like, why are you stopping me anyway? So I'm at a bus stop waiting for a bus with my bag, whether I be coming from a grocery store or going to school. Why would you stop me? You know, I'm not harming anyone. I'm just sitting here, you know. So I've dealt with that a lot of times. but in this incident in particular, I felt that, well, what happened was we ended up getting to the parking lot and the police instantly came. And they got out their cars and they told me to put my hands up. And the first thing was the weapon. And I'm like, what weapon? And it's like, someone just got stabbed. And I was thinking that they were talking about me, seeing that I was completely bloody, you know, and mangled and mauled and just, you know, discombobulated. They didn't ask me if I was okay. They didn't ask me if I needed help. They didn't ask me, you know, any of, you know, the things that you will probably ask the person if they were bloody and just attacked. No, they were more concerned about the weapon and, like, you're going down. You know, that's how I felt. Like, they were instantly ready to say, oh, yeah, you're the guilty one. You
so
know,
you were
like,
guilty. There was no, even though
exactly,
you were
bloody,
no one
because,
you
of course, there's a white man laying in the street, you know, and he didn't do any wrong. It was all my fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's how I felt. Like, that's what was emanating towards me, that I, you know, that feeling like, you know, I was the guilty one, that I did, you know, everything wrong and he did nothing wrong, when it was the complete opposite. So now I'm getting frustrated because now I have to sit in the back of a police car without getting any medical help, still bleeding, still in pain, you know, not knowing what's going on. It took them at least 30 minutes to get me to the ambulance, which was about 10 feet away, to get me proper medical care. Mm. They didn't do that. And then, you know, they were so ready to interrogate me that they didn't even properly check my wound. That's why I ended up getting, you know, and I know a lot of people seen a picture of my cheek being swollen. Well, what happened was when Molly, that's the person who attacked me, decided to smash a glass in my face, she smashed the saliva glands. So they never checked that. They just sewed my face up without, you know, checking to see if there were any complications. They just sewed me up. And over time, it just, the pain never went away. And I noticed that, like, my cheek was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I thought it was just an infection. But I come to find out that, you know, the saliva wasn't getting to my mouth. It was just, you know, building up inside of, you know, between my cheek, you know, my skin and my cheek. It's caused by, you know, them being in a rush to interrogate me and not really do a proper medical check.
Tell me about how it was. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, the whole issue with policing, I mean, is it's clear that there's evident bias that happens because of how you look or because of presumptions of gender identity and how you're supposed to act. What was it like when you started to, when you get booked and you have to go through the actual judicial system and that process? Did you find, you know, can you tell us anything about how the prosecutors, the defenders, the lawyers, the judges, just the system of the courts reacted or responded to you and what that experience was like?
That was, you know, and of course, a lot of people know, you know, if people don't know by now, the discrimination and the disproportionate, you know, targeting when it comes to minority groups and non-minority groups in this country, in this day, and a person can say they don't notice that, I feel like they're in total denial or they're been living under a rock. Because it's like, you know instantly, as an African-American person or a non-conforming person, that they're going to try to target you because they already feel like you're unfit for society as is. You know, I feel like in my eyes, I feel like a lot of times, you know, these officials look at us as, you know, the others. You know, it's them, then it's the others, you know, and we're worth nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's easy for them to be, you know, unsympathetic and unempathetic to the struggles and the plight of, you know, people in the African-American communities, especially, you know, looking at the poverty rates and knowing, like, you know, why recidivism happens and, you know, why all these things affect, you know, us as African-Americans and people of color. And so, I can honestly say that I didn't know nothing about the prison industrial complex. I knew nothing about, you know, capitalistic plot behind it and, you know, the history of it from slavery up until now. And so after reading books and educating myself, you know, through autobiographies and, you know, different, you know, zines and things that people send me about, you know, this is how it works, that kind of put me in a place to know that, you know, regardless of, you know, how, you know, good I might look in court or whatever, I know that these people are going to see me as a transgender Black person. And that in itself made the biggest difference of how this case was going to turn out. Because there would be no question in mind if I was a white woman or a white man that was a Black man there, right? Of course not, you know. And there's been so many cases up here in Minnesota alone where the district attorney, Michael Freeman, has literally not even charged people or even made them go to the police station for self-defense claims. So it's like, why am I being targeted? You know what I'm saying? And not only, you know, did they slap me with one murder charge, they slapped me with two murder charges for one person. Why? Because they feel that if they wouldn't find me guilty on one murder charge, they could find me guilty on the other murder charge, or they can find me guilty on both murder charges. However it seems fit in what is supposed to be a jury of our peers, which is a complete and total lie.
But there were no other trans Black women on the jury?
No, there was one. There were probably two other people of color on the jury.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. And so I just kind of knew, like, these people were going to target me. Like, they were going to get me any way that they could. And there was no hope for me. They did everything they could during the trial process to, you know, pretty much build on my case by bringing up past indiscretions as far as a bad check that I wrote for my account. And
so bouncing a check is charge is cause for a murder charge.
Exactly. But all of his domestic cases against his wife and his criminal record were omitted. So it's pretty much like, again, he was this, you know, angel who was attacked. He didn't have a record. He had a record, but people in the court wouldn't have known that. That dealt with assaults and domestic violence and things like that.
Yeah, you talked about, you know that, you know, you talk a lot about how it just became really evident for you that the bias against, that just the blatant racism, quite frankly, and the homophobia and the transphobia was cause for how you were charged, the things that you were charged with, the way that you were treated by the police. Can you tell us a bit about your experience being incarcerated, and what was that experience like for you? Well, first of all, how did they manage your gender identity in terms of placement?
Of course, you know, for them, it was all about anatomy, and I guess that determines where you're being placed. And it was difficult going through that situation because, that was also something that was very biased in court was, you know, my gender identity, using that, you know, because they wouldn't let, you know, professionals come in and talk about, you know, the violence against trans women and, you know, how it might have been for me growing up and, you know, why the situation came to what it was. But they felt like that was, you know, not irrelevant to the case, which was the, you know, exact opposite. Also, of course, there was discrimination in the jails, in the prison, as far as, you know, sexualizing and, you know, just demonizing and even tried to delegitimize me as a trans woman. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of course, I was, you know, very, you know, free-spirited, and, you know, I had no issues with holding back how I felt, and, you know, with the support of my team, that kind of, you know, put me in a place to feel like I could fit in the system. But I don't want to so much sensationalize on the fact that I was a trans woman in prison, because, you know, I wasn't the only trans woman in prison, and also I wasn't the only person in prison. Mm. And there are a lot of people in prison that are in there and who will never be able to see their families get out for, you know, petty crimes. And, you know, I feel blessed that I'm able to even be able to have this interview, because it's like, people don't have these opportunities to tell their story or to, you know, because I can't say I beat the system, they still locked me up, but, you know, any other person, they could have been found guilty on both charges and been looking at, you know, double life terms for one person or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, again, like, yes, it was horrible for me, but we also have to think about for, you know, the other people that are still in there, how horrible it is for them. And knowing that, you know, some of them won't ever get to, you know, have that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I kind of, you know, displaced myself in that bracket of just saying, oh, I was a trans woman in prison. No, I was a person in prison. Mm-hmm. And I was one of millions of people in prison who are in there for, you know, all the wrong reasons. And so, you know, I can, you know, and I know a lot of people have or try to take in that, you know, and use that as a scapegoat to say, you know, I was a trans woman in prison and they did messed up and they did me this way. But no, I'm advocating for all the people in prison, and myself and everyone else included, because it's like we all still have to go through the same, you know, struggles and the same, you know, oppression and the same depression, the same, you know, fears and the same struggles in, you know, in that facility and all the facilities in this world, so in this country and in this world. Mm. So, you know, it's just, you know, I don't want to so much sensationalize on the fact that I was trans in prison, but I can definitely, you know, advocate as being a person in prison speaking for all the men and women that are locked up and, you know, behind bars.
And that is why we love you. I think that is such a powerful point and a note to end on. Oh, I do have one more thing for you. So tell me, you know, you got to tell me if you watch Orange is the New Black.
Of course.
I know Laverne's your homegirl and all, but what do you really think of the show?
I feel like the show is, you know, there are a lot of things wrong. And of course, you know, again, it's easy to sensationalize on, you know, these things that have these things that happen in a women's prison, but you know, they glamorized it and they kind of, you know, watered it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, of course, it's made for TV. But,
are you entertained? Are you entertained?
Yes, it's definitely entertaining, but I can guarantee you it's not like that. I wish life was scripted like that.
Yeah, you and I both. Well, thank you so much for spending this time and chatting with us. This is really illuminating. We are so just honored to talk to you and are with you in the struggle, and will always be on your side. So thank you for doing what you do, and we will stay in touch with you.
Thank you so much for having me, Aisha.
Thanks, Cece. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.